Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle. And despite being a gaming podcast, just before the episode, we were looking at a list of women who defy conventional body types in Hollywood.
I think there was a typo in the title of the article, because I don't really see how the majority of them defy conventional body types. I think they meant to write define.
Yeah, the list has people like, what? Sheryl Crow, what? Yeah. Okay, that's probably anybody outside of England's probably going to be who. But other people like Kate Upton is on there, Rosie Huntington something or other.
Whitley.
Names define. Whitley, yeah. Her name defies convention. Who's quite thin. She was in Transformers 3?
4, but whatever it was. Yeah, as arm candy for Shia LaBeouf and did nothing.
Yeah.
I've said before about, my God, how long that movie was.
Tyra Banks is on this list.
Right. What surprised me you said a minute ago was Jessica Simpson. I mean, really? She's out there. I mean, I don't know how she ever got a job in Hollywood.
Yeah. So unconventional.
Or the Sophie Vergara?
Yeah, she nothing on her looks. She must have had to sleep with somebody to get her position, but nobody would sleep with her.
Yeah, the personality.
Jennifer Lopez is on there.
Kat Dennings, Tiffany Thiessen. Anyway, no, none of them are gamers. I don't know.
Don't know where to take this other than
hard
so.
Link.
When you're looking to put NPCs into your game, go the unconventional route and choose people like we just mentioned.
Just choose all models.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really let them know that this game is out there.
Yeah.
Oh, hold on. Now she looks like Megan Fox. Whoa.
Hold on.
Whoa.
You chose a picture of Liv Tyler for the NPC? Oh, man.
I don't
what
know
kind
if
of
I can
game
get
are we
into
playing?
This.
In actual gaming news, we have some big news. We have a forum again.
Yay.
And Chris actually posted, too.
Yay!
Did he?
Yeah, he did, actually.
Oh, just hello, right?
Yeah, just hello. Yeah. That's more than he did before, though.
In my I did hello before, but in my defense, my computer is dead. So.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
But we very kindly were given a sub-forum on the Happy Jacks RPG podcast forum. So That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, that's great.
Stop by and say hello.
Please.
And if they're listening, they're thinking, this was number 2 on your list of things? Some random list that you found? Yeah, it's under an article about Nina Agdal, so I had to check it out. Who, again, is saying, you shouldn't tell skinny girls to lose weight because it hurts.
But fat girls are okay? Is that what the message was?
No, the message is it hurts at all, everybody.
Right.
On that note.
Yep, don't know where to go from there. Oh, speaking of fat people.
I just keep pitching them and you guys keep with it.
Yeah, but I don't know exactly what you're pitching. So, because we now have a forum, again, and we're hopefully reaching a wider audience, it was recommended to us that we do kind of a reintroduction episode for people who may not have listened to past episodes, and we've also done 128 of them as of this recording. So,
yeah, and the first introduction was we were still new, so it's not that great,
right? And things have gotten so much better now.
Yes, we're all professional now.
Sarcasm didn't go over very well, just to show you how well things are going. To that end, yeah, we're going to take this opportunity to reintroduce ourselves, kind of say how we got into gaming. Where we are now, and hopefully where we would like to go in the future.
Okay, well, I guess I'll start. My name's Chris, as I said in the introduction. I'm from the States. I say Chicago, but that's a contentious point. Listen to old episodes if you want to know more on that. Trust me, you don't want to know more on that. Actually, yeah, it's kind of nice to be doing this reintroduction because a lot has changed since we started the podcast. I was single and a teacher, and now I'm married, a designer, and I have a daughter. So, yeah, things have changed a little bit in the past few years.
Yeah. So I'm guessing you have lots of time to game now.
Yeah, quite the opposite. The more into gaming I've gotten, the less time I get for it. But
all right, well, I'm Wayne. I'm also from... I'll start that
also
again.
From Philadelphia.
Yeah, I know.
Where I'm not from.
Yeah.
Good one. All right, I'm Wayne. I'm also from America. I'm from Philadelphia, which is not a contentious point, though. unlike Chris, not a lot has changed for me since starting doing this podcast. Yeah. And that's
for
about
what it's
it.
Worth, Wayne.
Yeah,
you
but
have less
I guess
time
maybe
to.
the point in a reintroduction is they don't know the old Wayne. Or maybe they don't even know that your name's not really Wayne,
right?
But we just call you Wayne because we have two Chrises.
Right.
Yeah. Which I really appreciate because when you make a good point, Lyle sometimes say, "Oh, good point, Chris," and then I'll take all the credit.
All right.
Yeah, Wayne is Wayne's middle name, which he never goes by.
Except
but it came down
circles.
To whether or not calling Chris Ray or Wayne.
And I believe Chris said he didn't want to be called Ray, and I said, yes. Yeah, fine, whatever, call me Wayne. I don't really mind. So you're welcome, Chris.
Thanks.
Yeah, I'm Lyle. I guess I'm lucky I didn't, not name Chris, so I didn't have to go by a middle name.
That would have been awesome.
My middle name's, I'm fine with it. It's Ashton. I'm from Canada. I guess some things have changed. I went back to school back to graduate school, which I've not finished yet. I'll be finished at the end of this year. It has nothing to do with gaming. Actually, it does. It does, because I'll be posting a survey soon, that I made up for my practicum, and it has to do with gaming. Like Wayne and Chris, I live in Japan, of course. We all live in different cities, but they're all connected to each other.
By being in the same country.
Yeah, but they're a lot closer.
Pretty much
you
being
think
on the same train line.
Yeah. The cities we live in are a lot closer to each other than I'm sure what people in the States think of when they hear separate cities.
Okay, so just to start, what was the first role-playing game or tabletop role-playing game? I guess we have to say now that you guys played. How'd you get started?
D&D. All the way. Woo! Yeah.
Oh, you're one of those people. All right. I actually got started with Hero Quest.
Yeah, that's why I say tabletop role-playing game. Hero Quest, that's like a board game.
Yeah, but...
But it kind of lends into the tabletop world, you know?
Right.
All
right.
Your character does level up and that stuff, and you can go through different dungeons and things.
No, I agree. My first is Monopoly. Yeah, because, I played a role, the thimble.
And I was a level 5 thimble.
I would progress in money. What? mine was a D&D Red Box.
Oh, cool. That's where I started, too, on the Red Box.
How long did you stay with the Red Box? Because I think, like a lot of people, you're looking at basic, expert, advanced, master. But then when you look at those hardcover books that say Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, you kind of feel like that's the real game, and the Red Box was...
The baby game?
I guess the baby game or the game light, which it was, but...
Well, for the longest time... Well, okay, I mean, how... I actually didn't start with the Red Box. I started with the rule book from the Red Box. I bought it off of a guy at school who probably stole it off of somebody else. I base this on that he eventually stole my magic cards and sold them to somebody else too.
Be glad you got out of that hobby when you did then.
Actually, to this day, I'm actually very thankful that he stole all my magic cards and I stopped collecting them.
That's a really weird spread there, because people who start on the Red Box, I don't imagine they have magic cards. But that's about, 10 years difference?
Yeah, it's a very long... I mean, I went to school with the guys, so, we went to school for, all of the way through high school, and from elementary to high school, etc. All
right.
But, yeah. So I got it from him, and I just remember really liking the art. It had a kind of that playthrough adventure in the back. Like, it was almost like a choose-your-own-adventure kind of thing. Yeah.
That's so smart.
It was great. It sold me on it so well. And so I played that with my friend for the longest time. And it was kind of like, for me, D&D was like this choose-your-own-adventure thing for the longest time until some of my cousins were also into it, and they showed me what it actually was.
I played a lot of choose-your-own-adventure. Or I played Red.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Those were great books.
Yeah, I liked those. I even did the ones that weren't fantasy.
Yeah, I think I had, Kung Fu Master, or there was a series called, intergalactic spy that was not a choose your own adventure book, but was exactly the same thing. And I thought that was pretty cool because it had like crossword puzzles and like other kind of puzzles you had to write in the book. So it was more than just, you know, make a choice and flip to this page. It was, you know, kind of complete this maze. And if you end up at this point, go to that page. If you end up at that point, go to the other page.
So that's really cool.
You know what I was more into than D&D at the time?
What's that?
Rima Williams, The Destroyer. It's like, it's a pulp series for adults.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And we would go to the, I used to live on a military bases, Canadian military bases, but they had the Stars and Stripes overseas in Germany. And that's where you would buy the role-playing games, but they also had the regular books and they had the comic books. And we didn't get too excited about Dungeons and Dragons. We'd like knock on each other's door and it was like, the new Destroyer book's out. Oh, great. I need number 65.
And then what? Like jump on your BMX bike and go hit the Stars and Stripes?
No, we could have a card in those books. Yeah, I don't know why they didn't stop us from buying it. They were really violent and had other stuff that was more adult.
Mm-hmm. I am now imagining the cover of like a Harlequin romance novel.
I'm thinking the exact same thing.
No, but they're like those. I mean, Harlequin romance is for women. And then
The Destroyer was for men.
The Destroyer, The Executioner.
The Murderer.
You guys didn't know?
No.
Punisher?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Punisher is pretty much a ripoff of a pulp character called the Executioner.
Oh, interesting.
Same background.
Did not know that.
Yeah. So we would buy these and we get really excited about that. But yeah, we also got excited about Dungeons and Dragons. But we played it, but we didn't really know the rules. So it was more like...
Yeah, exactly.
It's like collecting. And I think I was definitely a collector even back then. So you're buying the Monster Manual 1, 2, the Fiend Folio, Deities and Demigods, but not really to play, but just to kind of have.
Right.
Because we played outside a lot when I was a kid. Like, we didn't... I mean, we had Atari, but Atari kind of sucks even back then. Right. Like, even back then, we knew it sucked.
Yeah. I had an Atari and a Commodore 64, and a bunch of the games I had for, I didn't have that, like, paddle, you know, with, like, the rotating dial. So, like, all I had was a joystick, and I'm like, this game doesn't work.
Yeah, I wonder if people, like, look at the old Atari or old, like, VIC-20 games, or... And they go, God, didn't they know that, like, really sucked? No, we knew. Like, you know, we had the same eyes when we played Raiders of the Lost Ark on the Atari.
Oh, I had that, yeah.
We knew there was no whip coming out. It was like this dot.
But you know and what? Then, we had nothing else, so we liked it.
Yeah, it's like, still remember that game. It's like, wow. So obviously, stuff like that drove us outside. Forced to be healthy.
Yeah.
Forced to play in the woods and stuff like that. So, yeah, so we'd really sit down and read a lot of the rule books. And,
yeah.
I mean, we learned some new words like charisma or constitution.
Right. Never use them again.
Thaco. Yeah. Use that in everyday conversation.
Yeah.
But, I stopped by junior high school. I'd stopped playing.
Like, yeah, I think,
and I got really into comic books, and that's where all my money went. It was comic books and just reading those.
Yeah, I don't think I was never much of a collector. To this day, I'm not either. But I actually just enjoyed reading them, and it's kind of a weird habit of mine. I'm not much of a reader at all, but I love actually sitting down and reading gaming books for, you know, the fluff and the system and everything like that. So I had a lot of the basic D&D books, but I skipped over most of the different sets, like the box set, the blue set, all that stuff. I eventually, when it got into AD&D came out, and then they had like also basic D&D as a side game, and I got a lot of the basic D&D things. But yeah, I didn't really play until, geez, ages later, like junior high school, and then I started up on Rifts. But I think you said you were doing Rifts too at the time, right, Lyle?
So, in high school, grade 9 and 10, you did your thing, get interested in music and fashion and stuff like that, as you do. And then probably about grade 11, I changed schools. And in this new school, there was these guys that would play Axis and Allies in the chemistry room. So, which was right after lunch. So I'd come in and they were playing there. So I figured, you know, I was really into comic books. And I said, do you have any games on comic or about superheroes? And they said, no. But we have this game called Rifts. So I got back into role-playing games through Rifts. And
when When you played Rifts back then, did you actually ever play?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I'm impressed. Because all of my friends, we all got together, and making Rift characters took so long, like choosing all your skill percentages and everything like that. We kind of sat down, made characters, and then I guess went back outside and played again.
I told you guys in an earlier episode I was going to start up a Rift campaign.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And wow, I'd forgotten how long it takes to make one of those characters.
Doesn't it? Yeah.
Like the skills, and then it's like, okay, now I get these, and yeah, it's... Don't miss that. Mm-hmm. No, but I played Heroes Unlimited, Rift, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which was actually a lot of fun if you random roll that.
I've heard that one is really good. I've never tried it myself, though.
Yeah. It's still the Palladium system, but...
Mm-hmm. Which says a lot.
But it's fun when you just randomly roll.
Yeah.
And I ended up being like an armadillo that was really tiny. So I had to like stand on another animal guy's shoulders or head just to like look through the slot in one of those doors, you know.
Now, the random roll reminds me of original Gamma World. And I think that was the first RPG that I actually bought by myself. Mm-hmm. Like I just found it at a garage sale pretty much for like 25 cents in this beat up box with all these crappy yellow dice and the book practically falling apart. And I bought it, and that was actually middle school, I think, or late elementary school. And yeah, just kind of, again, rolled up characters, and those random tables were great for just choosing like an animal or a creature, then just like rolling and see what kind of weird mutations and creatures you ended up with. So yeah, again, that was fun, spending a lot of time doing that. But like, I don't even really remember how I knew about D&D, because the first version of D&D I started with was Revised Second Edition, with the black hardback books, and the one that starts with, "Relax, this is not D&D Third Edition." I don't really know how I knew about it. I just always kind of knew about it somehow and wanted to play, but was never really able to find anyone to play with or the books, and then just
that's a problem.
It.
Yeah.
Yep. Exactly.
I was lucky in that right across the hall I had three guys within a year apart, because it was the older brother and two twins. And we had a lot in common. Well, not so much with the older brother, but with the two younger brothers, the twins, who are the same age as me. So instantly you got three people.
Right.
And there was a guy below us who played, but he took the rules really seriously. Like, he actually made you roll everything up.
Which is so fun.
Yeah. So we only played with him once because he's like, "Okay, roll," and I'm like, "Oh, really?
What do you mean roll?"
He's like, "Roll in front of me." I'm like, "What? I can't lie. I can't come away with all 36s
on 3d6."
Yeah. It's like, and then he made you like roll like for strength, for intelligence, so strength, dexterity, constitution, like in the order that they're written.
Wow.
And I ended up qualifying to be a gnome illusionist. And I was like, "Oh, I didn't want to play either a gnome or illusionist." And I'm stuck. Like, can I change the? Nope. All right.
And I have this image of you saying, "Great, we're gonna sit down and make your character. I want to be neither gnome nor illusionist. Roll, roll, roll. Great, gnome illusionist." Now, in elementary school, we got into Games Workshop stuff and wargaming stuff, because that was a store that I did have access to, and that's actually where I played my first RPG, Advanced Hero Quest. Which was actually like a proper RPG, pretty much.
You're back to that. Okay.
The board game one was pretty much a board game, but the advanced one was more of a proper RPG.
I think my brother had that. Is that the one with the Frozen expansion?
Expansion? That may have been regular Hero Quest, because I think I had that one. The Advanced Hero Quest was the one that had the tokens of all the Citadel miniature monsters that you could use in the game, but you were expected to actually buy the Citadel miniatures to, you know, represent them. So that was my takeaway from that. But that's when I got into Games Workshop stuff.
Curse them for giving you tokens. Well, yeah,
exactly.
So I went to the store when I started playing Rifts, and I said, "Oh, I'm playing this game called Rifts." The comic book store back when, I guess. I suppose they still do, but comic book store, sold a lot of games, and that's the only place you could get your games.
Yeah.
Said, oh, I'm playing Rifts now, so I'm going to buy the main book. And the guy was like, no, I can't do that to you. It's like, well, you can get that, but to be honest, the better game that's like that is Torg. So I bought Torg instead and preferred that. Then by the time I went to university, the second edition Vampire came out, and I remember that buying experience pretty distinctly, because I was working in a group home at the time, so I would come home on the weekends, and I had to, like, about an hour to kill before I had to do a night shift, and I go in, I pick up this book and flip through it, get the clans and the little quotes they had about each other, and
right.
It just blew me away. So I picked that up and straight away, and then that was definitely the game that I got everybody hooked on. Because I tried to get people hooked on Torg, but no one ever actually bought it. But everybody that I introduced Vampire to would go out and buy, like, Vampire, then some preferred Werewolf or whatever, and they bought those. And then I think I really got hardcore into role-playing games.
Yeah, I was never really got anybody to buy role-playing games. Like, I was always the guy who bought the stuff for the few times I got people to play. Kind of like the longest campaign I had before, you know, coming over here was probably in, like, high school, where we were doing West End Games Star Wars D6, you know, and that lasted for about, like, six sessions. I thought that was an awesome system, and it was a system that, and a setting everybody was kind of stoked to play, and, you know, it was really fun. But looking back now, everybody was very casual gamers, which was totally fine, and it was cool to hang out with all my friends. But yeah, nobody else apart from me really said, great, I'm going to go buy something for this and run a game.
Yeah, I'm wondering if my timeline's off, because we were also into West End Games Star Wars and also into DC Heroes. And that might have actually got me started, and Vampire was an extension of that, or the other way around. Who knows?
I'm kind of jealous of you guys. You had so many different kinds of games. Like, I tried out a lot of stuff, like, during the Rifts phase. You know, we tried out, like, basic RPG and Rollmaster and things like that. But when I really got into gaming was, I suppose, even after high school. It was probably in university. But when we started up a D&D 3.5 campaign, and, like, that's when I got really, really into it. And, you know, we were playing every week and had a great time with it. So kind of went full circle. But I have played lots of other games. But for me, kind of, like, gaming is D&D. Or at least it was until I met you guys. And, like, I appreciate what you've done. You've really opened my eyes for a lot of systems that I never had much appreciation
for. No, it still is D&D for you.
Well, no, it's not. You know, I've grown beyond that. No, like, I'm still, D&D is kind of like the warm, snuggly home that I go back to. But there's other exciting places to go right now.
There's some marketing for WotC right there, like the D&D snuggly. You know, that stupid blanket with sleeves in it? I can see Chris wearing one right now.
Exactly. I'm podcasting from inside it.
Oh, take a detour. What other games, Wayne, I know HeroQuest for you, but what other games do you guys play or have played? Like, other types of games. Like, for me, it was Warhammer, Warhammer 40K.
Right.
I have played Magic, and I get into it every now and then, but can't really say I'm a card gamer.
No, I got big into Warhammer as well, probably because it's kind of how I started, and I don't know. I like reading RPG books as much as Chris does, I think. And, you know, you can read RPG books for pleasure, but building and painting models was a bit more, not active, but something you could do by yourself and not feel lonely, you know? Because it's one thing to read an RPG book and be like, oh man, it'd be great to run this game, and no one's going to play. Whereas, you know, painting figures is a bit more, I don't know, not constructive, but, you know, easier to lie to yourself that you are having a good time.
That's nice. I was big into Warhammer, too. In fact, I was way too big into Warhammer. I spent ungodly sums of money on that game.
I think everybody did.
Yeah, it's true. It's Games Workshop. So, you know, buying a single squad is already an ungodly sum of money.
Right.
But, yeah, I'm quite the opposite, though. I don't think I ever ever completed painting in an army. It was, they were always, I had the Silver Horde.
Yeah, so did I. But.
Yeah. But, yeah, actually, you know, I dipped my toes in tons of different games, but the only ones I really proper got into were D&D, Rifts, and then Warhammer on the side. Yeah.
I also did a lot of Magic, especially in university. I think that's kind of when I started getting really heavily into Magic because, you know, suddenly you go away to university and, hey, there's all these other people to, you know, play with. So
yeah, that's what happens when people go to university.
All right. There's all these, all right. How about this? All these other people to interact with.
As you do, you go to university, you got the freedom to buy as many Magic cards as you want.
All right. You know what? A, you do. B, I was playing with my fraternity brothers, so whatever. That,
wow.
A, yeah, yeah. That just shows you how nerdy my fraternity was back at that time.
Yeah, you know what I'm going to tell you, Mom? You're not the boss of me. I bought 3 booster packs. I'm going to make it rain with land cards.
None of that is true at all. Although it's hilarious.
Did you have a sister sorority? Did you go like on card raids?
No.
Actually, they did have a sister sorority, but it was actually their sisters.
Oh,
that's how late the fraternity was.
Oh, dude.
Honestly, I am thinking of the sister sorority we did have, and hey, linking back to unconventional beauty at the beginning of the episode.
They defied convention.
Oh, they did. Would not want them as actual sisters. I'll leave it at that.
So, sorry, that's kind of gross what you said.
Yeah, it is, dude.
And that's so staying in. Okay, yeah. So how about now? What are you playing now? I know the three of us together are playing Pathfinder.
Right.
I'm running a kind of just a trial game because we've all looked at Pathfinder for a long time and we said, dang it, we finally got to try this one out.
Right.
So,
because we're timely as ever.
Exactly. Yeah, we're almost at the end of it now, but yeah, it's a lot of fun. I'm enjoying it.
It's similar to 3.5 and not 4E because, you know, doesn't have that level of balance, but it's reminding me of 3.5.
Yeah, yeah. But we'll do a proper episode reviewing that later on.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. Is that enough of a teaser?
Tune in later to see how much Lyle's enjoying it.
I like it. And it's funny because we're going to, well, maybe not so funny, but like we bought some games that are in kind of the same vein. And just before we bought them, I was thinking, I think Pathfinder is scratching that itch for me of something like 3.5 plus alpha or better. Yeah, it does feel like it is a better version of 3.5. And that's what they're aiming for, so success. Whether or not it's the best version of that type of game, I mean, that's something that we'll talk about when we talk about those games.
Interesting, and not to get into it, obviously, but maybe I just don't have that good a memory of 3.5, and by that, not that I mean that I hate it, I just don't remember that much about it, because I'm not saying Pathfinder is, you know, worse than 3.5, but I don't really feel it's any better.
Sure. I guess we'll talk about that, because we do have a series called Campaign Confessions, where we talk about both the system that we played, as well as the actual campaign. Like a review of the system, what we thought about it, and also a review, if you will, of the adventure. So, you know, some game master advice. You know, whoever is the game master gets theirs. So,
right.
I'm really looking forward to this.
It's not like pick on one particular person.
Because we do all GM. So, as you said, Lyle, when one person
runs
a game, it's kind of like, okay, well, we know a campaign is confession is coming up. So, you know, sit there and take your lumps, but know that you'll be able to dish it out later during another game.
Depression meds.
We tend to. That's a good point that Wayne just made, that we both play and game master. It's probably not too unusual for people who've played for a while. Wayne and I have both done White Wolf.
Right.
I've done it as like either vampire. I've also done like a World of Darkness system or like a film noir. Chris has done things like Fate and
Savage Worlds.
Dungeons and Dragons 4E.
Wait, you did Changeling and
Hex.
What else?
Hollow Earth Expedition.
Right.
Yep. Yep. And also recently, lots of variations of Apocalypse World.
Right.
Yeah. And I guess you could say we all did Cosmic Patrol, although Wayne was the one that wrote the adventure.
Hmm. Yeah.
Which doesn't mean squat because it went in a completely different direction. Which was totally awesome, and yeah. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I think we did an episode on that.
Yeah, we did.
Didn't we?
Yeah. And it's worth listening to. It's a great game.
Yeah, Wayne did it with, I think it was called Soul Patrol, because yes. It was 70s black exploitation.
Yes.
Yes, yes.
Combined with people who are unfamiliar with Cosmic Patrol. It is combined with pulp science fiction, I suppose.
Yes.
Like a Buck Rogers style yes. science fiction. So.
And I did it as, obviously, a joke. But as you brought up, Lyle, giving players another genre that everybody knows the tropes for really helped anchor the game.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So, if there's one piece of advice for Cosmic Patrol, yeah, definitely do that. Is because if the gimmick, if you would, for Cosmic Patrol is that everybody takes their turn game mastering.
The same adventure. You swap between scenes.
Right. So the story changes because people are swapping around that very significant role. Mm-hmm. And it is pretty free form, but you just got to make sure that you have something that everybody can really, really hang on to. And in Apocalypse World, we discovered, when you don't have anything to grab onto, or they grab onto separate things, and that can be a bit disjointed. Mm-hmm. Just like this whole point. It kind of feels dropped into the episode.
It's a good point, though.
Sorry. So we talked about games that we started with, talked about the game that we're playing. What about some recent game purchases? I think the three of us have gotten into Kickstarter recently.
Yeah, so we've got the new release of Fate that just came out, Fate Core.
Right.
And also the Cortex Hacker System. Well, all of the Cortex System, but the one that we're all very interested in is the Cortex Hacker System. And what else was there?
Well, all of us backed Emergent.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yep, and that would be like a lot like Rifts, and that's right. A combination of magic and science fiction. Mm-hmm. We were able to interview the creators of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That should be out. We haven't received that yet. It should be out
soon, hopefully.
Yeah. Those were our Kickstarters. You got one that was called Begins with a T.
Oh, Tremulous?
Tremulous.
Yeah. As you mentioned, I like Apocalypse World stuff, and so jumped on the bandwagon with Tremulous, which is Lovecraftian horror, and, you know, got the book, started reading it, and I'm not impressed.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, good news is Cortex.
Yeah, Cortex looks nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm really impressed with that book. We mm-hmm. Have the PDF. They're going to send the book soon. So, should receive that. And I guess Wayne ordered the print copy of Fate.
Those should be coming soon, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking forward to that.
I don't know. I don't have Fate. What, are you guys impressed with it? Or?
Well, you know, I've always been a big fan of Fate. I love it.
I've not read enough of it, despite backing it, to give an opinion either way. It's a game that I thought was interesting enough where we should probably give it a second try. And then they're not Kickstarters, but some of the recent games we got were Numenera and 13th Age. So, again, timely as ever.
Yeah.
just through social media, you know, I hear a lot about Numenera, what with it being, you know, Monty Cook and,
right,
you know,
right.
13th Age kind of, you know, being the guys who worked on either 3E or 4E, and finally interested enough mechanically to see what they offer. So picked them up recently.
Yeah, I remember we were talking about Kickstarter. I saw Numenera on Kickstarter after it had already closed out, but it sounded amazing. So if it had still been open, I would have Kickstarted it.
Hmm.
Or kicked in for it. I don't know what you call it. Given it money.
Kicked started it?
I guess so.
I've started reading Numenera, and again, this is going to sound negative, but I'm not that impressed.
Yep, that's pretty negative.
Yeah, Is that ambiguous? Or
it's going to sound negative because it
it's
is.
It's not really negative.
The unspoken because it is.
I actually really like the fluff for Numenera. The basic idea, and we'll get into this later in a bigger episode about it, is that it's post several apocalypses, but it kind of has magic in the case of, like, there was high technology left over that created magic, and it's weird. There were 9 apocalypses before this one. So there's kind of the legacies of 9 different civilizations. They're all extremely advanced civilizations. So there's a mix of a lot of different kinds. Like, one civilization, for example, was really good with robotics and AIs. And another civilization was very good with biotechnology. So there's lots of different kinds of angles for it. And, the society that you're in has progressed enough to where there are cities, but it's kind of like a fantasy-based world, but there is no magic. There is, however, this kind of lost secrets and lost technology. So, I don't know, the setting really grabbed me when I read it, and the way they described the mechanics also sounded really interesting. It sounded extremely simple, like almost like a Fate system where you choose an adjective to describe your character, and you choose a verb to describe what they're good at, and kind of this defines your whole character without the need for lots of different kind of rules and such. And yeah, I haven't read enough about those rules yet to see how they actually work, but it sounds really cool.
Well, I'm curious, because I didn't read that much about the setting. So you saying, yeah, the 8 or 9 apocalypses or ends of civilization that came before, do they actually detail or mention what civilizations were good at what?
Yeah, vaguely and without numbering which one was which.
Mm.
At least from what I've read. Remember, I've read the material that was released on Kickstarter, so it may not be the same as the final version.
Okay, fair enough, because... Yeah. As I said, I read very little of the setting, but the setting did not grab me. It seemed like it was just we're going to replace magic with technology and call it tech, but it works for all intents and purposes like magic. And that thing about, yeah, there's been like 8 civilizations before this one, to me seems kind of meaningless because you don't do anything with those prior 8 civilizations. I mean, you might as well say there's 36 or 99 or whatever. It seems to make no difference. It's just a cool number that was chosen to kind of give it some, I don't know, implied weight. But like most science fiction movies that I have a problem with, you then do nothing with it. So why have it?
I'm thinking right now why you didn't work in... I like to complain in your introduction, Wayne.
That's what I should have put in there. Thank you. That's what I should
have. Or did you think I'm from Philly covered that? I actually was kind of busy with school stuff this weekend, so I didn't have a chance to read too much about it, and same with 13th Stage. I would say that they look good in the sense they aesthetically look good.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that counts for a lot, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
So I'm the shallow one of the podcast. But in looking at, especially with 13th Age, and in all fairness to them, you know, you have people from 3E and 4E saying, you know, here's what we came up with combining the, you know, those ideas.
Right.
So, I mean, you shouldn't be too surprised it looks like 3rd and 4th edition Dungeons and Dragons or shares a lot of similarities. So I guess my big question is when I'm looking at those two games is that I'm not necessarily seeing a lot of new things, but I'm wondering if these are real improvements on stuff that's out there that people really like.
Right.
Hmm.
So when we talk about that in more detail, that's how I'm going to be approaching it. Because, I mean, you're looking at some big names like Jonathan Tweet for 13th Age and Monty Cook, of course, for Numenera.
Right.
And, they've done a lot. And, I mean, Monty Cook says in his introduction, he's had a dream. He's had this idea for 20 years, combining these two things and kind of looking at it. It's not that I think either one of the two things that he's combining are necessarily revolutionary.
I actually had the same idea for a campaign setting way back when.
Right. Yeah, and
but you're not Monty Cook. That's the difference.
Exactly. And let's see what Monty Cook does with it.
Yeah.
I realize I was very negative about Numenera, but I will say this. The mechanics, from what I've read, are different enough from other traditional games out there to make me at least say, okay, there is interesting stuff going on here.
And mechanics can rescue a game. I mean, not that Marvel superheroes are bad by any means, but it's certainly not new, and we all know Captain America. But when we looked at Marvel Heroic Role-Playing and the system they were applying, it really... made that superhero genre, that game, that much fresher, which was why we were so excited to get the Hacker's Guide and why we were kind of not devastated, but very disappointed to find out that they were no longer going to have the license.
Right. Yeah. But they did get the Serenity and the Firefly license. That's the thing they're working on now.
Yes. Sorry. Not a massive fan of Serenity or Firefly, so it wasn't much of a consolation.
It's hard for me to imagine that in Cortex, really.
Really?
I don't know, because they have the dramatic system and the action system. Mm-hmm. So, like, Smallville and Leverage, respectively, where the licensed products that kind of brought that to everybody's attention. I can imagine, like, one of those being used for Firefly, sure. Mm.
Don't get me wrong, I love Firefly. I'm a huge fan of it. But Cortex really represents well kind of the larger-than-life fantasy. And I don't mean fantasy as in, like, a Dungeons & Dragons kind of fantasy, but fantastic reality for it. And Firefly wasn't. It's very down-to-earth, realistic, gritty kind of thing. So I could be just completely wrong in it, but it's difficult for me to imagine that setting in that system. But I hope to be surprised and wrong.
The 15-year-old girl taking on a bunch of cannibalistic monsters, that
right,
was
right.
realistic. I can't remember Serenity. Who did she end up beating up? Was it the Reavers or was it the...
Everybody. She killed everybody.
Thank you.
Doesn't matter. You don't have to specify. Yeah, but that being said, Chris, like you look at something like Leverage, mm-hmm. which I've heard described before as competence porn, and you're telling me that you do not see some of that in Firefly and Serenity. The characters are very good at what they do, and yes, they screw up sometimes, but it's more plot-based rather than skill-based.
Yeah, you're right, to a degree. So yeah, maybe I am wrong about it, and I hope so, because I love both the system and that setting, so I would love to see them joined well.
All right, well, to get the sour taste in our mouth of a little bit of Wayne criticism.
A little bit. That's like a standard dose.
Right.
Nowhere near it.
So we'll cleanse our palates with something positive. Not necessarily the three best games or role-playing games, so what are three games that you definitely have to have on your shelf?
Okay, the three I'd put out are Fate, and I'll go with just the general one, the new Fate Core, and then Monster Hearts, which is one of the hacks of the Apocalypse World system. It's a fantastic social game, and because both of those are really kind of system-open, sandboxy indie games, I'll also go with D&D as a crunch monster.
I think with D&D, you have to say The Edition, because there's people that care about that.
3.5 for me personally.
3.5, not Pathfinder.
I thought about it, but I'm gonna say 3.5 or Pathfinder because they're close enough to where they're both good.
All right, Wayne, how about you?
I'm still struggling for my third. I was actually going to say Dungeon World, because I think that's a bit more accessible in terms of being one of the Apocalypse World hacks, because everybody knows what standard fantasy is. The other one I was gonna say was Ubiquity. Because I think that is a great system that does everything Savage Worlds does and gets practically no attention or love. I'm kind of struggling for my third one. Like you, Chris, I was probably going to recommend something, I don't know, crunchy. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll unfortunately steal one from Lyle and say Cortex with probably Marvel Heroic Roleplaying.
Wow, why do we play together?
I don't know.
I would say definitely one of them would be World of Darkness, and I'll pick the Vampire World.
Right.
I actually like Vampire Requiem, like even as a setting. Some people don't, but I think it's more accessible. The Masquerade, even though I started on that. Mm-hmm. And I definitely prefer the new World of Darkness over the old World of Darkness as a system and just the way they've released it. Because I think it's a really good standalone book. And the stuff that they just, like, their armory and armory too are just great. My problem is I got more than three games on my shelf. And I'm looking at it right now.
I've got a lot of games on my shelf, and most of them are Apocalypse World hacks.
So, Lyle, what's your top 30 games if somebody were here to roleplay?
Well, you know Battletech's got to be in there somewhere.
Because it does everything better.
Mm-hmm. I'm probably going to have to say Battletech as one of them.
Chris and I are both horrendously surprised.
That's a game where I just love collecting it. I think it produces some really, really solid, you can read this kind of books. It's the only game world where I've read a lot of the game fiction. In fact, I think I've read most of the game fiction. And I've really tried to do that with others. Like, I've tried to do that with Dungeons & Dragons game fiction. I just really could not get into it. Mm-hmm. And for my last one, I'm going to have to say Cortex Pathfinder.
Cheater. And here I specifically didn't say World of Darkness because I knew you'd pick it and because it's very similar to Ubiquity.
Okay, I'm going to cheat because you guys already said it. It's kind of like they're both worth half each. So, yeah, those two.
So he who makes the question gets to break the question, I guess. Huh?
That's all right. I technically went with 4-2. So.
Yeah, you ask your own question next time. Right. But yeah, there's obviously a lot of great games out there. Mm-hmm. Torque Star Wars. All right. Well, I guess that wraps up. Our introductions went a little bit longer than we thought. Obviously, we were a lot more fascinating than we expected.
Whoa, I knew I was fascinating.
Even I surprised myself.
Yeah. So I think we can stop introducing ourselves for another 100 or so episodes.
Thank goodness.
And focus on an actual topic, which will be next week. Cool.
Great. All right. Well, thank you for joining us on Idle Red Hands. Check us out online at www.idleredhands.com, idleredhands.com. You can listen to the episode right there on the website, or you can stream it through Stitcher or through iTunes, or you can download it off of DriveThruRPG. You can get hold of us by following us on Twitter or liking us on Facebook, sending us an email at info@idleredhands.com, or you can check us out at our brand new forums at the Happy Jacks. Thank you again to Stu and all the folks at Happy Jacks. The URL for the forum is really long and difficult, so we're just making a link on our website, idleredhands.com/forum, and that will redirect you right to the right place. So thanks a lot, and see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
DriveThruRPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. DriveThruRPG, the one true source for RPGs.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.
So, who are you and what do you do?
Sorry, I was distracted by a picture of Pamela Anderson's new haircut.
Was she also on the list of unconventional beauties?
No, she got a pixie cut.
So she's unconventional now is what you're saying.
That looks good. It looks good.
Really?
Yeah, looks really
hard
good.
Hard to imagine much looking good on her.
Harsh.
I just never found her attractive.
Maybe you're not unconventional enough.
It must be. It must be.
So I'm guessing Lyle got into gaming by being introduced by...
pixie cuts.
Yeah.